Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. As we hit a day with a new dilemma for Democrats. On one side of the coming health reform votes, President Obama. On the other side now, former Democratic Party Chair Howard Dean. The president first.
We just had a very productive session about the final stages of health care reform in the Senate. And from the discussions we had, it's clear that we are on the precipice of an achievement that's eluded Congresses and presidents for generations, an achievement that will touch the lives of nearly every American. There are still some differences that have to be worked on. This was not a roll call. This was a broad-based discussion about how we move forward. But whatever differences remain, there is broad consensus.
There are some good things in this bill. The problem is we are now committed to a solution using the private insurance companies, and you will be forced to buy insurance. If you don't, you'll pay a fine. And 27% of the money that you put in will not go to your health care. It'll go to CEOs who make $20 million a year. This is a bigger bailout for the insurance industry than AIG. But, a very small number of people are going to get any insurance at all until 2014, if the bill works.
So Howard Dean speaking on Good Morning America there. You heard George Stephanopoulos trying to break in on his new gig. And President Obama speaking at a news conference yesterday after meeting with all the Democrats in the Senate. And let's keep going. Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio for the emerging compromise, then more Howard Dean opposed.
This bill has a lot of things in it that are really, really important. It insures 30 million people. The insurance consumer protections are stronger by far than they've ever been. No more denying somebody for pre-existing condition. No more women paying more than men for the same policy that people that are a man and a woman the same age. No more cutting insurance off because a lifetime cap because someone was sick and expensive over their lifetime and the insurance gets canceled. So there are a lot of really good things in this bill. I'm just disappointed that it's not as good as it could be, but we're going to keep trying.
I think at this point, the bill does more harm than good. I don't believe there's going to be the money around in 5 years because the insurance companies are charging so much. The pre-existing conditions piece, which is disappeared essentially, because this fine print in this bill allows the insurance companies to charge you three times as much if you're older than they do if you're younger. This is an insurance company's dream, this bill, and I think it's gone too far. It's a shame, but bad decisions were made along the way, and now we're in the last week of this, and this is the Washington scramble, and I think it's ill-advised.
So Howard Dean on Good Morning America, Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown on All Things Considered yesterday. You ever noticed that Sherrod Brown and Ed Rendell have the same voice, by the way? But okay, listeners, democracy happens here. Let's vote. This time for Democrats and anyone else in favor more or less of Democratic-style health reform, it's time to vote on a hypothetical emerging health care bill. Is it a compromise you can live with to expand health insurance to close to universal in the United States and that insecurity for you and your family? At least the bill aims to do that and to try to control costs. Or is the bill going to be compromised too much for you? Are you on the Howard Dean side of this or the President Obama Sherrod Brown side of this, because this is what it's going to come down to now. The Republicans aren't going to vote for it. It's being compromised this way and that. Democrats, liberals, are you for this? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Now, granted, the focus this week clearly is on what the bill won't have. It apparently won't have a public option insurance plan to compete with the privates. It won't have a provision to allow Americans to import medicines from other countries at cheaper prices. That was defeated yesterday. The so-called CLASS Act to create a long-term care insurance program. Joe Lieberman threatened to filibuster that, too. And that's apparently out. But there's still all that the bill will have. New rules on insurance companies. No more denying coverage based on pre-existing conditions, though Howard Dean says that's not real. And no more lifetime caps on benefits for the insured and expensively ill. You heard the other things that Sherrod Brown mentioned. Plus, a mandate for the young and invincible to buy insurance. to pay into that system, for employers to cover your workers or pay into a pool, and income-based subsidies for employers and individuals to buy that insurance if you need it, paying for it further with a tax on Cadillac health insurance plans or just on Cadillac incomes, a new squeeze on Medicare providers who will get lower reimbursements helps to pay for it too. And it does have a scoring from the Congressional Budget Office that says expanding health insurance coverage and paying for it in these ways will actually save the government money. And all this seems to have 59 votes now in the Senate, with Democrat Ben Nelson holding out for tighter restrictions on women who want to buy policies that include abortion. So listeners, if you are basically for health reform in this direction, we want your calls. If you are in Congress, would you vote yes or would you vote no? Our lines are already full. You can post to our comments page. We can talk about all this all day online, 212-433-WNYC. Our comments page is still a very good place to do it. These conversations on health care break out there almost every day, and we're going to do it again today. It's crunch time. Would you vote yes or would you vote no? 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Democracy happens here, even though it's not binding. And to help guide us through this, David Drucker, roll call staff writer, roll call the newspaper that covers Capitol Hill. David, thank you so much for coming on.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Talk to me about Howard Dean. We heard the clips. Why is Howard Dean coming out and saying, start over?
Well, to begin with, Howard Dean's not in office, and it's easy to throw shots at something and ask that you start over and kill it when you haven't invested an entire year of lawmaking in something. And people who are outside of government typically angle to get something as perfect as humanly possible. And when it doesn't happen, are often against this. This happens, you know, amongst people on the right and the left. But Howard Dean's voice should not be discounted. He is obviously very important in the progressive movement. His specialty issue over the years has been healthcare. He is a doctor by trade, a physician, and I think what he sees in this bill are what many on the left see, which is that it does not go far enough in terms of wrestling away health care and the granting of health insurance, the guarantee that you will have care from private insurance companies. And given that the public option is out, given that the Medicare buy-in for individuals ages 55 to 64 is out, I think this is just simply a bridge too far for people that are on the left to go with in terms of those that are outside of government. Now, having said all of that, I don't think Howard Dean's comments will affect members of Congress too greatly, because when it comes to a former governor, former Democratic National Committee chairman, and a sitting Democratic president, the president's going to win every time.
Well, maybe in the Senate, but what about in the House, which is more liberal? And there are members of the House leadership, as I'm sure you can report, who are saying we are not automatically going to accept a Senate very compromised bill.
I think you're right. The House is not automatically going to accept a compromise bill that is generated by the Senate. And I think that House liberals and House leaders will fight in the conference committee negotiations to have some of their priorities, if not all of their priorities, put back in. I think at the end of the day, it's going to require a heavy dose of presidential leadership in order to make sure this thing doesn't fall apart. I think the reason that Democrats, I would predict at this point, are likely to do what is necessary to get this passed, and I know in large part that means, you know, liberal Democrats eating things like the public option, the Medicare buy-in, a major Medicaid expansion, things of that nature. But I think the reason they're willing to do it is because the president will appeal to them that we can start now and just come back and fix this as the years go by, because what this bill will do is create a precedent for greater government involvement in healthcare and for tightening the reins on insurance companies. He will point to all of the things in the bill that Democrats have wanted for years that are in the bill. And he'll say the option is that we can do nothing, we can fail. That will hurt us politically, and he will argue it will hurt the country. And he will probably point out with the coming 2010 midterm elections that Democrats will never have greater numbers in the House and Senate than they have today. He's probably right. and that if they want to wait another 25 or 30 years to tackle health care reform, that's their choice, but that's probably what they're looking at if they don't go ahead with this bill. And I think, just one last point, because of the poll numbers on health care reform and because of the president's own lower approval numbers, the moderate Democrats, I don't think, can be bullied into taking what the liberals want.
Suzanne in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Thank you for calling, Suzanne.
Hi, it's Susan.
Susan.
I just want to say I'm with Governor Dean. I'm appalled, genuinely appalled, that they are selling out to the insurance companies. The public option was already a compromise from single payer. The bill they are passing is it betrays women. If they go with any abortion, they're capitulating on everything, on abortion limitations. They've already kicked out the public option. They're forcing people to buy from these insurance entities that have been ripping us off for decades. They will be laughing all the way to the bank. I mean, it is an absolute outrage, and they should defeat it, and they should start over. It is disgusting.
Even if it takes another 25 years?
It's not good. Look what to say that this is going to be repaired later is nonsense. When they passed Medicare back in what, the 60s, they said, well, they were going to gradually increase it so that it would cover everybody.
They added prescription drugs during the Bush administration.
Yeah, right. How many years did that take? They're not going to fix anything. They will never come back to this. It's too contentious. They've taken too much flack already. They would never come back and try to improve it.
Suzanne, thank you very much. The point that she raised about abortion, this seems to be, David Drucker from Roll Call, the final point of compromise for the Democrats still hanging in the balance, assuming they've given up on Medicare expansion or any kind of public option. This, at least from the reporting I keep hearing, is the final sticking point to get that 60th Senator, Ben Nelson, on board to prevent any woman from using her own money on the new insurance exchanges with no government subsidies to buy a policy that includes abortion coverage. Is that an accurate description of what Nelson requires?
No, I don't think so. What Nelson wants to require is that for all of the federal taxpayer-subsidized subsidies for people who cannot purchase their own health insurance with their own money, that none of those taxpayer dollars for subsidies could be used to pay for abortion procedures. This would not prevent or outlaw people purchasing private plans with their own money from buying a policy that pays for an abortion, that covers abortion procedures. And in fact, what Senator Nelson is looking to do is codify the Hyde Amendment, named after a former Republican congressman, that kind of set in stone the idea that federal funds should not be used to pay for abortions. Now, everybody knows that abortion remains legal in the United States, but that federal funds have not been used to pay for abortions. Federal funds are used to pay for all sorts of medical procedures, but not abortions. And pro-life Democrats, notably Bart Stupak in the House, wanted to make sure that because of all the federal subsidies that are a part of this bill to ensure that people can afford the mandate to purchase insurance, that none of the policies they would purchase with federal subsidies could be used to pay for abortions. Nelson's looking for the same thing. Now, I think they're on the verge of resolving this dispute. Bob Casey, a pro-life Democrat from Pennsylvania, a senator, is working on compromise language that would work for Ben Nelson and himself and would also work for the pro-choice Democratic liberals in the U.S. Senate. I think they're going to resolve this, and I think that if we don't get to 60 votes, it'll be for some other reason other than abortion.
Jeff in Midtown. You're on WNYC. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, just curious how the in conference committee would somebody get another chance in the Senate to prevent the compromise bill from coming up for a vote through filibuster?
You know, that's a really good question, and I'm still brushing up on my Senate procedure. I don't know that you can filibuster, you know, what's called a conference report, the bill that comes out of the conference committee. It may just be an up or down vote. I'm sorry I can't answer that more definitively, and I should be able to. I've been focused on the cloture process, which has been like a bear to get my arms around. But I don't think the final bill after conference report is subject to the same sort of chutes and ladders that you have with the initial bill.
And we're going to look that up. We're going to just try to look that up on the web, Jeff, and get you an answer on the air in a minute or two, okay? Would you vote yes?
That would make me a yes vote.
What? Say that again?
That would make me a yes vote.
Why would that tip you over to the yes
side?
Because
I would hope that between the compromise between the Senate and the Congress, we could get something more akin to a public option back in the bill.
Jeff, thank you. Jesse, in our Facebook group, writes, we got to see it through, but make sure we leave back doors in place to expand upon later, as in 2011 when the Democrats get a refreshed mandate, so Jesse hopes, to please complete what they started. HJS on our website, for me, this is now a hard vote, but I say take the deal and the fight continues. The Democrats should run on health care and the people will choose. And that raises, David Drucker from Roll Call, another political question for me. When she says the Democrats should run on health care and the people will choose, Republicans seem ready to vote unanimously against any health reform bill in both houses. That's why the real debate, as we're having it today, that reflects the meaningful debate in Washington, is only among Democrats. But in the context of the 2010 elections, is there no pressure that Republican lawmakers are feeling over blocking an expansion of access to health insurance? Assuming it's got these compromises in it, aren't their constituents feeling that pain? Half of unemployed people are uninsured. Other people feel insecure about losing their jobs and insurance. All the pressures that Americans are feeling about this, regardless of their politics, this doesn't matter in one congressional district that a Republican holds in America?
Well, I don't want to say it doesn't matter in one of the 435 congressional districts, but I will tell you that Republicans are facing no pressure to vote for this bill. And I think when you look at health insurance reform in the context of politics, you have to look at it in the context of the legislation before us, not in the context of health reform generally. Because I think Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill and Republicans and Democrats out in the country would all agree that they are for the idea of health insurance reform, of lowering costs, of increasing access. And in fact, everybody says so. But once you move beyond a general policy and put it into legislative language and start to make choices, not only do lawmakers then start to form opinions about those choices, but their constituents also form opinions. All of the public polling has shown over the last 10 days that support for this particular health care plan has been sinking. It's been sinking among independents. Republicans can't stand it. Right of center independents don't like it. Democrats are skeptical, even if they're leaning for it. And so if you had created a bill that had a number of key Republican priorities, and if you had done something smaller, I think you would have had more Republicans, you would have had some Republicans on board, and there may have been more pressure for Republicans to vote for something. But there is not actually any political pressure, particularly heading into 2010, for Republicans to vote for this. And health care reform 9 months ago was about all of the general ideas that everybody thinks about when they think of reform. Health care reform today is about this bill. And that's why we are where we are.
Here's the answer, by the way, for Jeff and Midtown, for you too, David, about whether you can filibuster a consensus bill. And the answer is, according to Ezra Klein in the Washington Post yesterday, the conference report, that is to say the consensus bill that emerges after the House and Senate conduct their negotiations, is subject to the filibuster. It is, however, not subject to amendments. So you can vote to filibuster, vote against, or vote for. You cannot vote to remove, say, a Medicare buy-in proposal.
Thank you for that, by the way.
So they just lost Jeff, by the way, right? He said only if you can't filibuster the conference report could, or the conference version, would he support the bill. Let me ask you about one of the claims that Howard Dean made in the clip that we played earlier, and that is that the pre-existing conditions piece has disappeared from the legislation. That's one of the main things that we keep hearing as bedrock, and we heard it from Senator Sherrod Brown in the other clip, that at least the health insurance companies would be stopped from denying you on the basis of pre-existing conditions anymore. Howard Dean says that's basically disappeared. Can you clarify that?
Well, I think it's a matter of opinion. You know, he said that it's disappeared because of the prices that insurance companies can charge. And so his charge appeared to be that with higher prices, that might as well be as though you are denied coverage on it based on a pre-existing medical condition. But I think, I think he's being a little bit too hard on the bill. I mean, it would prevent an insurance company from deciding not to give you coverage simply because you are sick or have a pre-existing condition of any kind. I think where there is some criticism that would hold up is the idea that the Senate bill, while purporting to outlaw annual and lifetime caps, meaning the insurance company would only cover so much of your illness, and after that you're going to have to keep paying out of pocket, that it does turn out that there is a pretty high, albeit still existing, annual cap in the Senate bill. So that if you are chronically ill and your illness is extremely expensive to treat, at some point you might start have to pay money out of pocket. Now, there's no lifetime cap, but there is a very expensive annual cap, as Democrats struggled to get a bill that was deficit neutral and met the president's cost limit of about $900 billion over 10 years. And so there's been some pushback there, but I'd say his criticism on the pre-existing condition may be a little bit over the top.
And while there isn't an allowance for banning you based on pre-existing conditions, people may not realize there is a sliding scale in this bill based on age. So you get charged a premium based on your age, which is really a surrogate for the chances that you will have a pre-existing condition.
Well, part of the problem is designing an insurance reform bill that takes into account the fiscal challenges faced by both the government and private insurance companies. I mean, you need to make sure, whatever anybody's opinion is of the insurance companies, you need to make sure that they can actually afford to pay out all the claims. And given the current high level of deficit spending that the government is experiencing and all of the implications of that, if you're going to spend close to $1 trillion over 10 years, you need to make sure that it does bring down the deficit.
Right, and brings in enough money. But it's not purely what they call community rated, which is that everybody in the group pays the same thing.
No, well, it's impossible to do that, though, because it's just like automobile insurance. You know, there are different risk levels with different populations, and I think it's impossible to force everybody to pay the same price, because you can either be unfair to elderly people who tend to be more sick, or you can be unfair to young people who are never sick, and you can force them to pay any level of insurance premium. Somebody has to pay for this. There's no way to do it that is completely fair to everybody.
John in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Real quick.
Good morning, Brian.
Hi, John. Let me get a couple of quick calls in here, and then we're going to go to WNYC's Fred Mogul, who's been doing an investigation into why insurance companies, at least in New York State, make so much profit. So let's get a few more quick votes in here, and we'll wrap it up with David Drucker from Roll Call and go on to Fred. John, hi, real quick.
Good morning, Brian. I'm opposed to the idea of the present bill. I believe in a single-payer program, at least a public option. And the question I have is, as long as the insurance companies have the right to raise rates to whatever percentage they decide, it doesn't matter whether you give people pre-existing conditions coverage, because, as your speaker mentioned, the fact that insurance companies can change the rates depending on the condition of the persons, that in a sense is a means of censoring people from getting insurance policies.
John, thank you. David Drucker, fact check on that. Is there anything that prevents insurance companies from raising their rates as much as they want? Is there any cap on premiums? Because, you know, so many people who are insured say, well, yeah, I have insurance, but I'm still completely aggravated with my insurance company because my premiums keep going up, my copays and deductibles keep going up, so they're nickel and diming me into bankruptcy.
No, there's nothing that's going to outlaw an insurance company from raising rates. There is a plan in the Senate bill that is being vetted by the Congressional Budget Office that would create a sort of national marketplace of private and nonprofit plans. that would be regulated by the federal government and would have to get an okay to raise rates if you're in that plan. But this doesn't turn the entire insurance industry market that we have in this country on its head and prevent companies from acting accordingly. The plan is to get a lot of young people into the system through the mandate. There's a lot more money then for insurance companies to play with, and there's less pressure on them to raise their rates because you have a much bigger population, including young people who don't get sick. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point.
That's the theory. Robert in Marine Park gets our last word. Robert, yes or no?
Oh, good morning. Yes, emphatically. I pay my own health insurance to Empire Blue Cross and Blue Shield. In the last several years, my premiums have gone up 70%. Now, I don't know how these exchanges work, but if it's any kind of a nonprofit co-op, I need some help right now. When Blue Cross was nonprofit about 10 years ago, my premiums did not go up for 12 years. So I need some help right now, any kind of help.
Robert, thank you very much. All right, David Drucker from Roll Call. This debate obviously goes on. When will we know? When will the Senate take a vote?
It should take a vote by December 24th.
December 24th, the day before Christmas. And this excruciating tension is going to last right up until that wire, you think?
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho to you, too. By the way, did you know that Time magazine named Ben Bernanke the Man of the Year today?
No, I did not.
Yes, that just came out. Does Roll Call name a person of the year?
Roll Call stays out of the man of the year business. We're too focused on the 535 men and women of our year every year.
You got one after watching Congress, working for Roll Call all year?
My man of the year is Max Baucus. Took a lot of hits. The Senate finance bill ultimately will look like something that he said it should look like 6 months ago when he was being beat up by everybody.
An instant opinion with an actual man of the year with a name on it from David Drucker from Roll Call. Thank you very much for your work today.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. WNYC's Fred Mogul up next. He's been looking into why insurance companies, in New York State at least, make so much profit.